You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 178 by Rudolf Steiner, entitled Secret Brotherhoods and the Mystery of the Human Double, translated by Joanna Collis. This is Lecture 3, given in Zurich on the 6th of November, 1917, entitled Behind the Scenes of External Events, Part 1. Many years ago, when I was working in Berlin and happened to be at a play, news of the assassination by an anarchist of the Empress of Austria in Geneva was as though wafted into the theater during the performance. As this news came wafting in during an interval, I found myself standing near a man who was then a theater critic in Berlin, but has since written well-known philosophical books. He was expressing his astonishment in rather a memorable fashion. He said, quote, "You can be understanding about many things in the world, even if you find them unjustified and don't agree with them, but," close quote, "so said the man," continue quote, "it's incomprehensible and serves no purpose for an activist movement to kill a sick woman whose continued life could not have changed things in any important way, and whose death had no obvious connection with any political ideas," close quote. I think that man was expressing an opinion that must surely be that of any sensible person in today's educated world. Therefore, we might draw the conclusion that things happen amongst human beings, things happen during the course of historical events, that appear senseless when measured by the normal standards of life, things that even appear senseless if we try to explain them as some kind of mistake. However, this is the very kind of event, and we could add many, many more to the list, which shows us that something seemingly incomprehensible outwardly must indeed appear incomprehensible outwardly, because there are spiritual forces and spiritual deeds being played out, both for good and evil, behind the scenes, if I may use this expression, of events in world history. Spiritual happenings and spiritual actions which can only be comprehended if spiritual science can be used to throw light on the realms that lie behind the scenery of everyday life, as it runs its course in the sense-perceptible world. These things that happen can only be comprehended on the basis of ideas from the spiritual world, and they must of necessity appear incomprehensible, whether in a good or an evil sense, if they are viewed only in connection with the sense-perceptible world. So if one has an experience like this one in a theater, which might be called a coincidence, but could perhaps also be a symbolic guise for something karmic, then one is inclined to ponder on how different things look behind the scenes in comparison with what is being presented on the stage. These remarks are intended as a starting point for what I want to say today, which I shall also enlarge on further the next time we gather here. I shall talk now about what it is important for people to know in connection with all kinds of things that take place behind the scenery of events here on the physical plane. If one wanted to fit in with today's lazy way of describing, only in general terms, what lives in the spiritual world and is connected with human affairs here on earth, one would be unable to make them comprehensible, for we can only understand these things if we go right into concrete, actual facts of the spiritual world. As you know, and has been described and written about many times, we structure human evolution according to different periods. Great periods, such as the old Saturn, Sun, and Moon times, and so on, and smaller periods, such as the Lemurian and Atlantean ages and our post-Atlantean period. Even these smaller periods are tremendously long, and within them we speak of cultural epochs, which for our post-Atlantean period are the ancient Indian, ancient Persian, the Egypto-Chaldean, the Greco-Latin epochs, and our present fifth post-Atlantean age. We speak of these periods because in progressing through earthly evolution, humanity as a whole changes its, in this case, soul, S-O-U-L, characteristics from one period to the next. Humanity undergoes a real development in each such period, by which I now mean the smallest of the periods mentioned. Every such period imposes obligations on humanity as to what must be experienced, what must cause joy or sorrow, what must be learned, where the source of its will impulses lies, and so on. The task is to be tackled by the Egypto-Chaldean cultural epoch. The task to be tackled by the Egypto-Chaldean cultural epoch differed from that facing the Greco-Latin one, and our own age also has quite specific tasks. We can properly view the differences in the tasks facing these successive epochs with regard to the characteristics to be developed. Specifically, those to be discussed today, we can view these properly if we try to include in our considerations the experiences that belong to human life as a whole, and not only those that are important for external evolution, to which today's materialistic view wants to restrict itself. What is experienced externally by human beings on the physical plane is only one part of overall human life, which takes its course not only between birth and death, but also between death and a new birth. Life on the physical earth does not, on its own, give us the full picture of the successive epochs. In reality, the forces from the realm in which human beings spend their time between death and a new birth always come down and interact with the forces unfolded by them while they are here on the physical plane. What is involved is always an interplay between the forces unfolded by human beings after death and those which they unfold here on the physical plane. Throughout the whole period of the fourth post-Atlantean epoch, it was in order for human beings to be kept unaware about certain things. But many of the things about which the people of the fourth post-Atlantean epoch, the Greco-Latin epoch, could be kept unaware are the very ones of which the human beings of the fifth post-Atlantean epoch must become more and more conscious. In fact, this fifth post-Atlantean age will anyway be one in which much that was formerly outside consciousness will have to enter into the consciousness of human souls. Such developments take place in accordance with certain spiritual laws. They are governed by a certain spiritual necessity. Humanity is simply predisposed in such a way that certain capacities of understanding and also certain forces of will develop at a specific time. During the fifth post-Atlantean age, humanity will become ready for certain things just as it became ready for other things in earlier periods. Humanity becomes ready for these things. One such matter for which the humanity of this fifth post-Atlantean age is becoming ready is something that people today find especially paradoxical, because a large part of today's public opinion is striving in the very opposite direction and is wanting to guide people in this opposite direction, but it cannot be avoided. The spiritual forces that are inoculated into humanity, if I may use this phrase, during the course of the fifth post-Atlantean period, will be stronger than certain people will wish, and stronger than what public opinion expects. One matter that will assert itself powerfully will be the possibility for humanity to be guided more in accordance with occult principles than has ever been the case before. It is characteristic of this development that during this fifth post-Atlantean age, certain conditions of power, certain strong capacities to be influential, must become concentrated in small groups of people who will have much power over other larger masses. Part of today's public opinion is working strongly to counteract this, but it will develop anyway, for a specific reason. It will develop because during the fifth post-Atlantean age, a large part of humanity will, out of what is maturing in its soul, out of what is necessary for the evolution of humanity, develop certain spiritual capacities, namely a certain natural ability to look into the spiritual world. This part of humanity will certainly represent the best basis for what is to come in the sixth post-Atlantean epoch age, the age that will follow our present one. But in the fifth post-Atlantean age, during which it is making these preparations, this part of humanity will have little inclination to turn its attention strongly to matters of the physical plane. It will be concerning itself a great deal with bringing the life of heart and soul onto a higher level, and putting certain spiritual matters in order. And because of this, others, who are rather less suited to such spiritual life, will be enabled to seize certain conditions of power for themselves. There is a degree of inevitability about this, and it is something that was much discussed during the final third of the 19th century in those circles who know about such things. There was constant discussion of the urgent necessity to ensure that this possibility should be guided not into evil, but into good paths. During the final third of the 19th century, and especially as the turn to the 20th century was approaching, occultists of every persuasion were heard to say, "Preparations must be made so that those who attain the power to act may be the ones who are worthy of it." Obviously, except in the case of very few circles, those closest to the speaker, for whatever worldly reason, were the ones seen as worthy. Amongst occultists, this subject was as topical then as it is in a certain sense today. There are others, too, that will come out and become known to people and enter into their will during the fifth post-Atlantean age, simply because human beings have reached the stage in their development where they are ready for them. These things are more far-reaching. In fact, they are so far-reaching that they must be of serious concern to all those who are conversant with such matters. During the fifth post-Atlantean epoch, the human being's physical apparatus for thinking will become mature enough to comprehend fully certain elements connected with diseases, certain processes of healing, and connections between natural processes and diseases. Those who know about these matters are concerned because they must adopt the goal of ensuring that the individuals who will be chosen to bring teachings and impulses about such things out into the open will do so in a proper and dignified manner. For there will be two possibilities. Either it will be possible to put out information about these things in a way that leads to calamity for the world, or it will be possible for them to be taught in a way that leads to welfare in the world. These things are connected with the inmost essence of certain conditions in human procreation, and certain conditions connected with diseases, and also with certain conditions relating to the advent of death. By being made known to humanity, these things become weighty thoughts and impulses and are very significant indeed. Meanwhile, the purpose of this fifth post-Atlantean age is to bring the degree of freedom to human beings which they will need in order to receive enlightenment about certain matters that have hitherto lived more in the subconscious realm of their soul, and also to enable them to master these things. Those who know about such things have been at great pains to consider what is feasible or can be done in the one or the other direction. For everything that can be done in these matters conveys a degree of power and a possibility of participating in human affairs in far-reaching ways. With regard to the development of the fifth post-Atlantean age, these matters have, as I mentioned earlier, been very much to the fore within the esoteric streams of the 19th century, right up to our own time. There is also another fact that those who know about it regard as very important, so that because of its importance they must bring it into connection with various others. I have mentioned this in lectures from time to time. When you have stepped across the threshold to the spiritual world and are making spiritual observations there, you find that single facts, always individual facts, appear before your soul. It then transpires that facts which at first sight appear to the spiritual eye, EYE, to have nothing to do with one another, are actually connected when you grasp their meaning. Such facts illumine and clarify each other, and then enable you to press on further into the essence of the spiritual world in the profoundest sense. A further fact, which I also want to put before you, will at first sight appear completely unconnected with what I have just said. But you will find that this further fact does actually have very much, a very great deal, to do with those things I have just mentioned. This further fact is this. I'm turning today to the souls of human beings who have died, and on becoming acquainted with what I might call their life situations, in quotes, we find that there are some among them who are extremely worried after death about becoming acquainted with those souls who met their earthly end in situations like that which befell the Empress of Austria in Geneva. In other words, we discover that those who are sent through the gate of death by activists, let us call them this for the moment, represent a great worry for some others who have passed through the gate of death in the normal way and then gone on to have their experiences in the spiritual world. We find that human souls who have passed through the gate of death in the normal way dread after death having anything to do with those other souls. They avoid having contact with them. Please do not, in this case, dwell on what must seem to your feelings to be paradoxical about this reaction. There are, of course, so many ways in which souls can meet and have dealings with one another that it would be misplaced to bring our sympathy into play immediately, even though this would be a justifiable and understandable way to react in such a situation. We have to look objectively at the facts in a case like this. And the fact here is that souls who have had a normal passage through the gate of death shy away from souls who have been guided through the gate of death by the deeds of activists. These two things, this last mentioned fact and what I explained before, are linked, and the link is quite specific. On looking more closely, we find that the souls who have been violently propelled through the gate of death know something in the spiritual world after death which the other souls do not want to learn about from them at the wrong time. They do not want to learn about it sooner than would be beneficial. The situation is that the souls who have passed violently through the gate of death retain something on account of having lost their life in that way here in the physical world. They have retained certain possibilities of being able to make use of forces which they have had here, for instance, the force of the intellect. So, from over there, from the spiritual side, these souls can use the forces that are bound to the physical body and do quite different things with them than can be done with them here in the physical body. This enables them to know certain things sooner than is actually beneficial in the overall process of human evolution. Thus it is remarkable that what appears to be meaningless, namely a number of those actions by activists, is now revealed to have a meaning, albeit a very dubious one. To those who understand what is going on, these acts appear in rather a strange light. Here, in the physical world, we say a lot of nonsensical things that are supposed to be meaningful, but do not mean anything on closer inspection. Here in the physical world, we say, these people, these activists who murder people, are only doing it in order to draw attention to the misery in the world. It is a means of incitement, and so on. But if you analyze the matter and try to bring it into the context of social laws, you notice immediately that none of this has any meaning. It becomes meaningful, however, if you know that souls sent up into the spiritual world by such means understand things up there which they ought not to understand yet, and which souls who have died in the normal way even shy away from. Of course, what then suggests itself is that on the basis of information, such as is available, regarding the murder of the Empress Elizabeth of Austria, one should investigate esoterically the various assassinations that have been taking place, so as to discover what is going on in connection with those souls who arrive in the spiritual world as the keepers, as it were, of certain secrets that can have consequences, about which we shall speak in a moment. Those who examine the sequence of these assassinations purely externally are likely to conclude that the selection has come about by chance. But if you analyze the matter and look at the individuals who have been dispatched to their death in this way, you realize that they must have been selected on purpose, though not on the basis of criteria applying to the physical world, but rather on the basis of criteria applying to the spiritual world. However, on investigating a large number of known assassinations with this in mind, one comes up with something very peculiar. On looking at Carnot, at the Empress Elizabeth, and a good many others, something very peculiar becomes evident. What becomes evident is that, although, as I have described, there was a possibility of achieving something through these assassinations, it has not been achieved. Nothing of it has been achieved. It would have been achieved if souls had been found who would, so to speak, have been willing to receive what was on offer. Both parties would then have become involved in a transcendental, a supersensible guilt. The souls who had passed through death in the normal way would have learned about things which would have driven them in directions through which they would have become guilty. And those who had gone into death violently by means of assassinations would have made themselves guilty through having disclosed something which it is not yet possible to disclose. Higher spiritual beings, higher hierarchies, prevented this, because from a certain point of view the consequences would have been such that they needed to be averted for the good of a certain portion of humanity. The damage that would have been done by these things was prevented, so to speak, by the intervention of higher spiritual beings. So what we find here is an attempt made with unsuitable means, or means that were deprived of their suitability, an attempt to do something in the spiritual world behind the scenes of our usual physical world. On delving even further into these matters, we find the source of these impulses. In the greater part of the assassinations that have become known to you and have been discussed in Europe, the impulses, by which I mean the spiritual impulses, were not the original ones. They were derived from something else. They were, to put it simply, measures of defense. The purpose was to avert something else. These deeds were intended as a way of preventing other deeds along the same lines from being carried out, or rather, of preventing the consequences of such deeds from taking effect. This is a very mysterious matter, and this whole matter only becomes comprehensible if we consider what it was that had to be prevented. what it was against which these preventive measures had to be taken. We are looking here through spiritual science into matters that are profoundly connected with the impulses of present and future human life, about which it is extraordinarily difficult to speak, because everywhere they go against certain naive and also justified interests that people have. This whole matter only becomes comprehensible when we bear in mind that everything I have so far told you, that all these ventures of assassination I have so far mentioned, were actually guided amateurishly in a dilettante fashion, without thorough knowledge of the occult circumstances, because they were born out of a kind of fear as preventive measures and were also not guided uniformly. This whole matter only becomes comprehensible if we examine what it was that had to be deflected. As such, this has already been striven for and set in motion by means involving greater insight. Right up into the 19th century, there existed in the East a remarkable order, the Thugs. This order, which flourished in a part of Asia, had not come into being simply out of the longing in the hearts of its members to achieve certain aims. The members of this order were obliged to murder certain individuals indicated to them by superiors who very, very strongly maintained their anonymity. The order was a kind of murderer's order, which had the task of murdering certain individuals. Its activity simply manifested in the way one heard, from time to time, that one person or another had been murdered. The murder was committed when a member of the Order of Thugs was instructed by anonymous superiors to murder such and such an individual. Those in authority who set such things in train knew very well what goal they were pursuing. First, they arranged the affairs of the physical plane in such a way that this order of murderers could come into being. And then they arranged the affairs of the order of murderers itself in such a way that its purposes could be carried out. The goal of all this was to make those human beings pass through the gate of death violently, who would thus be equipped with a capacity that would enable them after death to know certain secrets. Those who arranged all this, then, also, on the other hand, set up here on the physical plane corresponding mirror events, as they are called in occult life. Their purpose is to set up corresponding mirror events here on the physical plane. Such events have, indeed, to some small extent, already been set up here on the physical plane. This is done as follows. Certain suitable individuals are schooled to be mediums. They are then put into a trance, and the streams coming from the spiritual world are guided to the medium by certain methods, in such a way that the medium makes known certain secrets that cannot be made known in any other way. The only way they can be made known is when a person who has been violently killed uses, over in the other world, certain forces which have remained usable as a result of the violent death. As a soul, that person comes to understand the secrets and allows them to seep into the medium. Those here on earth who have an interest in finding out about such things can then find out more about what such souls allow to seep into the medium. The things that are researched in this way are, in a sense, what I might call spiritual premature births. Souls who have passed through the gate of death in the normal way know if they then meet with the opportunity to come into contact with such things, that their time has now come to prepare themselves. And they show that they are preparing themselves, so that at a later time, when humanity will have reached the right stage of maturity, they will be ready to bring down certain matters from the spiritual world to the earth and inoculate them into the earth down here. Indeed, it is actually an important task for a number of people who are now passing through the gate of death to use when they have become mature enough for certain secrets, the normal forces in connection with those secrets, rather than learn about them through a foreshortened experience by using forces brought into play by a violent death. These human souls do indeed have the task of finding out about these forces and inspiring people who are here on the earth with them. People who are not mediums, but who should find out about them in a normal and proper way through inspiration. In normal life, one has to wait for this. When things that ought to come later make their appearance as spiritual premature births by the means I have described, through criminal occult activity, when this happens, those whose intentions toward humanity are not good, in other words, those who are black or gray magicians, can gain possession of such secrets. Such things have indeed been going on behind the scenes of external events during the current decades. The purpose was, firstly, to present certain groups of people with the secret of how to dominate great masses, as I indicated first of all. This secret involves knowing how those masses, who have little interest in external affairs, but who have budding spiritual capacities that can serve in preparing for the sixth post-Atlantean epoch, can be thoroughly dominated, and how such domination can be put into the hands of some few individuals. That was the first purpose. The other is something that will play a great part in the future, namely to get those secrets into one's clutches for the purpose of turning in a certain direction the circumstances that have to do with the processes of disease and also of procreation. I have already mentioned these things to a number of friends. Certain circles in this materialistic age are striving to paralyze and make impossible all of humanity's spiritual development, through causing people by their very temperament and character to reject everything spiritual and regard it as nonsense. A stream of this kind, and it is already noticeable in some isolated individuals, will become deeper and deeper. A longing will arise for there to be a general opinion. Whatever is spiritual, whatever is of the spirit, is nonsense, is madness. Endeavors to achieve this will be made by bringing out remedies to be administered by inoculation, just as inoculations have been developed as a protection against diseases. Only these inoculations will influence the human body in a way that will make it refuse to give a home to the spiritual inclinations of the soul. People will be inoculated against the inclination to entertain spiritual ideas. Endeavors in this direction will be made. Inoculations will be tested that already in childhood will make people lose any urge for a spiritual life. This is, however, only one of the things connected with a more intimate knowledge that must come about in this fifth post-Atlantean age regarding the connection of these natural processes and remedies with the human organism. They will make their appearance among humanity at the appropriate time. The decisive question will be what succeeds first, whether the endeavors to let those spiritual premature births get into the hands of individuals for the furtherance of their own purposes, or whether knowledge about these things will come down in the right way for the welfare of humanity when the time is ripe. The organization intending to bring about those spiritual premature births through working with the help of the thug order of murderers was not amateurish. It worked very systematically, but in a way that is frightful for anyone whose intentions toward humanity are beneficial. It worked professionally, not amateurishly, and knew all about the appropriate means. Because there were these endeavors to bring down too early from the spiritual world by certain means, something that must come during the course of human maturity in the fifth post-Atlantean age, and get it into the egoistic possession of a part of humanity, there then arose the anxious uneasiness in others, which came to the fore like a counter-image in the form of activism. But it was amateurish, because it was born of fear. Its intention was to help, but its endeavors made use of unsuitable means. What is going on behind the scenes of external events is very significant. These things would not be under discussion here today if there were not the binding need to draw them to the attention of those who are able to hear what is being said through having had some preparation in the matters of spiritual science. It is necessary for such things to enter into the consciousness of the humanity of the fifth post-Atlantean age. Only if they do enter into the consciousness of the humanity of the fifth post-Atlantean age will those things be achieved, which must be the goal of earthly evolution. The time must come when individuals take up the irksome task of thinking not only in the way thinking is taught by so-called educated people in the universities. A time must come when a number of individuals declare their willingness to take upon themselves this irksome view of the world which derives its direction, its concepts, and its ideas out of the spiritual world. Humanity must not be allowed to remain in the dormant state it wants to retain with those abstract, generalized concepts, not only striven for, but also called noble by the materialistic age. Anyway, when you consider what I have been pointing out, you realize that there are a good many ways of using the streams coming over from the spiritual world in order to do harm here on the physical earth in the fifth post-Atlantean age. There are a number of possibilities for this, one of which I have pointed out today. And the fact that one must stress the need for some souls to absorb such knowledge consciously ties in with the whole fundamental character of our age. The second half of the 19th century was a very important time. In one circle of our friends, or another, I have often pointed out that the year 1841 was a crisis year, a year of decision. This is not obvious if you look only at the events which took place here in the physical world, for it is necessary to see these in conjunction with what is going on in the spiritual world. The year 1841 was indeed a critical year for the introduction of the materialistic age, because that is when a certain battle began in the spiritual world, a battle of certain spirits of darkness, one might call it, who belonged to the hierarchy of the Angeloi. They fought this battle in the spiritual world until the autumn of 1879. They had various specific aims, of which we shall mention only one today. Between 1841 and 1879, the decision was to be taken as to whether a certain sum of spiritual wisdom could be brought to maturity in the spiritual world, so that from the final third of the 19th century onward it could gradually seep down to the earth and enter human souls, and there stimulate spiritual knowledge, knowledge of the kind that today we call the knowledge of spiritual science. Such knowledge has only become possible since the final third of the 19th century. The purpose of those Angeloi spirits between 1841 and 1879 was to prevent the maturing, over there in the spiritual world, of what was supposed to seep down. But those spirits lost the war they waged for decades against the spirits of light. In 1879, something then took place on a smaller scale, which has taken place repeatedly during the course of evolution, and has always been expressed by a particular symbol, Michael or Saint George triumphing over the dragon. In 1879, too, the dragon was overcome in a particular matter. The dragon was those Angeloi beings who strove for but failed to achieve what I have explained. So in 1879 they were thrown out of the spiritual world and into the realm of human beings. This was the fall of the Angeloi beings from the realm of the spiritual world into the realm of human beings. So now they move about here amongst human beings. They are here, sending their forces into the thoughts, feelings and will impulses of human beings by making mischief of one kind or another. By losing the battle, they have failed to prevent the arrival of the time when the spiritual wisdom is filtering down. This spiritual wisdom is now here and will continue to develop ever more and more, and then human beings will have the ability to see and comprehend the spiritual world. Those Angeloi beings have now fallen down to the earth. Here they want to do harm with what is filtering down. They want to guide the knowledge into the wrong channels, to rob it of its good powers and send it into bad channels. In short, having failed to achieve what they wanted with the help of spirits, they now want to achieve it here with the help of human beings because of the fall they experienced in 1879. They want to destroy the good plan for the world, which consists in spreading amongst human beings, when the right moment of maturity has been reached, the knowledge about how to control the masses, and the knowledge about birth, disease, and death, and other things. They want to spread such knowledge too early, by means of those spiritual premature births. They are also busy in other ways, apart from what I have mentioned here. Awareness alone will help us against the influence of these Ahrimanic beings. I have pointed this out many times, especially in the mystery plays. You will remember the final scene of the last one, where we see that the only thing which helps us to counteract Ahriman is to see through him, to know that he is there. The fifth post-Atlantean age must develop to the point at which many individuals can speak to the Ahrimanic powers and beings as Faust does. Quote, "For in thy nought I trust to find the all." Close quote. The attitude of mind must develop in which one can look into what the materialistic view sees as nought and there see the spiritual world. If this happened, Ahriman Mephistopheles would be forced to speak to such individuals as he speaks to Faust when he sends him to the mothers. Quote, "I will not grudge my praise before thou goest, and well I see that thou the devil knowest." Close quote. The other day over in Dornach I said in jest that Mephistopheles would never have made such a remark to Woodrow Wilson. To Wilson he would have said, quote, "The devil the vulgar herd ne'er sent, e'en though he have them by the collar." Close quote. What really matters, then, is that people must learn to look and see the concrete events taking place in the spiritual world. But when such a thing is most especially necessary, the forces who want to oppose it are also especially strong. And this then leads people to resist what they should be doing. There is something I beg you to take into account here in Zurich, in connection with your most praiseworthy plan that can be greeted with joy, namely, your plan to bring spiritual science to certain circles who are as yet very negative toward it. What I beg you is that you will not entertain any illusions about this. Much disappointment, indeed initially nothing but disappointment, is what one must expect when one tries to begin in the right way to do things that must be done and have to be done. Nothing must ever prevent us from doing these things. We must be so filled with the impulse, which is the necessary impulse for the present time, that we do what has to be done, regardless of whether the consequences, in this instance too, lead more in the one direction or more in the other. This is the only attitude that can lead to any success. Often what one achieves in one direction is not at all what one intended. I must beg you to realize that one must do far more than seems necessary for the degree of success achieved. This is because making propaganda for spiritual science involves getting involved in something quite different from what is entailed in all the other propagandas put out today in other fields. In other fields, one is, after all, usually telling people about things that they already know, as thoroughly as the worshippers praying in church know about what the pastor is telling them from the pulpit. Most associations have programs that are easily assimilated by people. Usually they remain in the realm of abstraction, beautiful programs that have nothing to do with reality and cannot lead to anything real. To nurture the endeavors of spiritual life in the fifth post-Atlantean age, one must regard them as something that is alive. But look at living creatures, and you will see that spiritual life has a mirror image in natural life. Do the fish in the ocean refrain from laying countless eggs that will perish? Consider how many fish eggs actually turn into fish. Myriads perish. This is how things are in life, and it is also how things are in the spiritual life. For years and years, you can speak again and again to huge crowds, but you must be satisfied if amongst all those huge crowds, just a few individuals are touched with enthusiasm, for that is how things are in the living world. We can really only achieve something by imitating nature, which is the mirror image of the spirit. What would happen if nature, having noticed how many eggs perish each year, refrained from allowing all the eggs that perish to be laid in the first place? The process of nature is unceasing, and it is this that leads to evolution. It is not important to consider whether one thing or another can be achieved, whether one person or another has a positive response. What is important is that we regard the matter in hand itself as the impulse, and that we cannot help but bring this impulse out into the world. The reasons, a number of which we have considered in our souls again today, the reasons why one must bring this impulse out into the world of the fifth post-Atlantean age are truly grave enough. And resistance against efforts to do it will be greatest when the need to do it is at its most pressing. As regards the things that happen here on the physical plane, which are just now barbarous indeed, people will have to make the effort to see all these things in conjunction with events that are taking place behind the scenes. Only then will it all become comprehensible. Today's historians, sociologists, economists, and politicians, who derive their rules and laws solely from the physical plane, in comparison with what is really needed today, such people are like someone who, when faced with an onerous task, begins to tackle it by lying down and going to sleep on a couch, thinking that he will manage to do the job in his dreams. This is indeed in most cases how those belonging to the life of culture and the life of the various scientific disciplines set about their work. These are people dreaming their way through reality. How do people now write about history? How do they write about sociology? They write as people do who have no idea about the real forces that lie behind the things they dream about. The source of events as drastic as those taking place in our time surrounds the people who are today concerned with science, like a room surrounds someone who has never seen it because he has been brought into it while asleep, and then goes on sleeping, thus only getting to know the room in his sleep. This is the way in which purely materialistic science gets to know the world. What I have called imaginative consciousness in my book titled The Riddle of Man is something that must, to some degree, come to the humanity of the fifth post-Atlantean age as a matter of course, for certain secrets must come to light, because otherwise they will be spread about amongst people in the wrong way, by means such as I have told you of today. As I have said, it is not easy to point these things out at the present time, but it is a necessary duty to do so. For in many matters one needs to develop a gift of observation that is different from the coarse gift of observation people have these days. There are two points I should like to make in connection with what I have been saying. Firstly, people do make some progress today when they endeavor to look at things they would otherwise have regarded as coincidences, but instead of doing this, now take them so seriously that they perceive them as suggestions for a deepening of the soul. Suppose you read of a particular person having died at a specific place and at a specific time. A number of things will suggest themselves to you if you ask yourself what would have happened if that person had died but 3 months earlier or 3 months later. This is, of course, merely a question concerning supposed possibilities. But if you ask yourself such a question, you can be sure that it can awaken forces in you through which you will reach different insights. Or perhaps you are traveling on a train and have a very important conversation with someone, a conversation that means a great deal to you, or something similar. A materialist will, of course, regard such things as pure coincidence. But someone who wants to find his way gradually into being able to look behind the scenery of existence, such a person will pay attention to such things. He will ponder these things, not by forcing them into conceptual forms, but by sensing the feelings they generate. He will concern himself with these things, because they are like hints of the forces at play between things that happen, forces that are more than merely mechanical or mathematical. That was the first point. The second, which I want to keep on and on mentioning, is that despite today's materialism, much that is spiritual is being revealed to human beings. But people are embarrassed to say too much about spiritual experiences they may be having. When someone opens up a little and begins to tell you things because he has developed trust in you, you will hear about how one person did this or another did that. If a person tells you really honestly and candidly why he founded this newspaper or why he did something else, he is telling you a dream, something like a dream. He is describing these things as suggestions coming from the spiritual world. You will find this happening everywhere, much more than you would imagine. Many more things are put into practice out of spiritual impulses than you would think. Only people are embarrassed to admit to this because others do not take them seriously if they talk about such things. So it is good to deepen your soul's attention in both these directions. Firstly, to watch closely when something happens that attracts your attention, for this might be a hint coming from somewhere. And, secondly, to notice how things are revealed to people out of the spiritual world, either in a good or a bad sense, things which give them the impulse to take action in some way. This happens nowadays more than one would imagine. These are the matters I wanted to draw to your attention today. Next Tuesday, we shall talk further about them. The end of Lecture 3.